I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Most of us are very familiar with this picture, a teenage boy downing a gallon of milk and some leftover pasta before sitting down for dinner. Adolescent males have a reputation for having big appetites, and their parents can spend a lot of time stocking the fridge to stave off that teenage hunger. The new Dietary Guidelines for Americans has some ideas about why teenage boys are so hungry all the time and some words of caution for boys and men who eat a lot of meat, much more than the recommended amount of protein according to the guidelines. So in this hour of Radio Times, male health and nutrition, and we have two guests who have joined us. Here in our Philadelphia studio is Saba Khan, and she's the director, the medical director of the Healthy Weight Program, and that's at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Saba Khan, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. And joining us by telephone is Elsie Taveras. She's chief of the Division of General Pediatrics, also director of the Pediatric Population Health Management Program at Massachusetts General Hospital. Elsie Taveras, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you for having me, Marty.
You're very welcome. Elsie, if I can begin with you, I began with the stereotype of the hungry teenager. Is that a real stereotype or is that overblown, do you think?
So I think both from, and I think Saba would probably agree with me, seeing patients in clinics and at least in my case, having my own early teenage boy, I can tell you it's not a myth. We do see children, particularly teenage boys, in this ravenous hunger phase as they are entering those early teen years with at least what it seems like some end in sight, although I haven't reached that point myself. Saba, time will tell in my case.
Why are boys then so hungry, Saba Khan?
I think so. Hi, Elsie. It's so great to be on the call with you. I think it's really as they're starting that pubertal growth spurt, there is some testosterone, and that does definitely increase their hunger needs. And girls, too, do get hungry in puberty as well. I think we need to acknowledge that as well, that girls are hungrier as well. And so that's why in the work that Elsie and I both do, there is definitely some caution to families saying, we know this time's coming up, so as your children are getting to this kind of age, it would be great for you to already have kind of instilled some healthier eating habits in the home, and already parents doing some role modeling with that too, to stave what's coming as your children hit this pubertal growth spurt.
Elsie, let me go back to you. And I'm looking at actually at a study. It's a couple of years old. It's from the U.S. National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. And they looked at, it was described as a lunch buffet experiment, involved something like 200 kids ages 8 to 17, finding that the boys ate much more than the girls, downing an average of nearly 2,000 calories at lunch. I mean, that is a lot of calories. Is it just that it's a growth spurt and we've got testosterone and all of that is driving what seems like this insatiable hunger?
I think as you said and as that study showed, the dietary intakes in that age group of the kind of 8 to 16 year olds is quite high. There are some pubertal and hormonal reasons for it. I think it is also a time when boys in particular, and especially those that are in sports or in athletics, are really trying to acquire more muscle mass. And there might be other drivers of higher intakes and appetites that support those higher energy intakes. So I think it's partly the drive in their growth and for sure some contribution of growth spurts. But I also think that there are other things that characterize those teenage years, particularly for children in sports and athletics and boys in particular, that does also contribute to those large appetites and large energy intakes.
Saba, you want to add to that?
Yes, I was going to just add to what Elsie's saying. I think it's perhaps because they are focusing on the wrong, well, not they are focusing on just one food type, which is protein in particular, that they're not necessarily now addressing the satiety issue. So they're not feeling full because fuller foods are fiber-based foods. That would be your vegetables, which the American Dietary Guidelines showed, or NHANES actually showed, the 2007-2010 NHANES survey showed that we are all eating not very many fruits and vegetables, but particularly this population. And I think that's part of it, that they aren't eating foods that are filling them.
Is it because, let's say, a 16-ounce steak, as huge as that is not a filling food? Is that what you're saying?
You need to be supplementing it with some adequate whole grains, some vegetables in there, because while that protein is helpful, as you notice, they sometimes feel more is better. So having two steaks is their answer for filling themselves up. And I think I know what Elsie has written about in the past is really that these boys aren't necessarily knowledgeable about the other foods that they should be also eating.
Elsie, let me go back to you. Is it also metabolism? Is that also built into this? And I'm thinking about those really active teenage boys who are playing on sports teams and have busy lives, many of them downing what seems like thousands and thousands of calories. And they look really thin and they look really fit. Right. They look really healthy, frankly.
So, exactly. And I would say there's a perfect storm happening, right? So let's take a typical adolescent male that I and Saba would see in clinic, a 16-year-old who is participating in sports, probably has an incredibly hectic school day and after-school activities, and likely having those daytime activities affect their sleep. And I would say the combination of, you know, a very physically active day, shorter and shorter sleep durations, is probably contributing to some disruption in appetite hormones that are increasing that adolescent male appetite. It's actually one of the things that is under-recognized is the contribution of too little sleep, which I think goes hand in hand with some of the adolescent male routines, and particularly those that participate in sports, that lack of sleep, as well as the high participation in physical activity, what those two behavioral aspects can do or can contribute to their metabolism. So, for example, there's really excellent research showing that insufficient sleep also contributes to cravings and to higher energy intakes and to impulsiveness around eating and choosing foods that aren't the healthiest for us. So I actually think it's exactly what you said, Marty. Part of it is their extra participation in physical activity. But I also think that somewhat unrecognized is the contribution of too little sleep in the adolescent males that we are seeing.
That's fascinating, connecting all these dots. And we know about sleepy teenagers who, you know, burn the midnight oil and then they have to get up to get to school at 7 in the morning. Saba, you want to add to that?
So I think just adding...
Exactly.
Elsie. I think just adding to that, I think exactly that as Elsie's pointed out, they didn't sleep very well the night before. So guess what? The most important, I would argue, one of the most important meals of the day, breakfast, is often skipped. They're not front-loading their day with maybe a boiled egg at that time with a piece of whole wheat bread would be great in making sure that we are not waiting until later in the day, lunchtime, maybe even later, to start stocking up. And so I think that's what it is. It's all very, very connected.
I'm looking at a sentence from this guideline report. Some individuals, it says, especially teenage boys and adult men, also need to reduce overall intake of protein foods by decreasing intakes of meats, poultry, and eggs, and increasing, as we've been saying, amounts of vegetables and other under-consumed food groups. If I can go back to you, Saba, why is too much protein unhealthy?
So there's actually a limit to how much protein, A, the body needs, and B, that the body can actually utilize. So while a lot of these boys that Elsie has said are like using this food because they're athletes, I think they're alluding to what sometimes want bigger muscles. There's a limit to how much the body actually needs. And I think a nutritionist who I work closely with, who works with our sports medicine, with our athletes in our sports medicine department, is saying that athletes are eating, male athletes are eating about 10% above the recommendations of protein that they need. But too much protein is an issue. It can cause dehydration and then go on to like cause kidney issues. It can actually, contrary to what we're trying to say with these athletes, can actually cause weight gain. And a big thing that teenage boys won't talk about is constipation. It causes them to become very constipated.
We put it all out there on the radio. You know, Elsie, I'm old enough to remember in the 1950s, we were all told to eat more protein. That's where we were going to get our iron and B12 and all those things that were supposed to be good for us. Are we as a nation then, and if we're focusing on boys and men in particular, eating too much protein at our detriment?
I think so. And I think the data that informed the dietary guidelines making that statement is based on evidence that particularly teenage boys and males are eating significantly more protein than recommended. In my case, and again, the typical teenage boy that we see in clinic, there is this perception that extra protein can really, I mean, there's so many promises, sure, of that, yeah, or what they would like it to materialize into, right? So losing weight, building more muscle, more energy. In some cases, they choose to have protein shakes. And again, the promises of that, it's a complete meal replacement. But actually, what Saba mentioned earlier is exactly true, that too much protein can stress the kidney, and it increases our body's need for water, which poses another problem with our adolescent boys, is that in that search for extra energy and muscle and losing weight, a lot of these boys aren't choosing water. Uh-huh. They're choosing sugar-containing beverages in many, many children and boys and girls, I would say, in those teenage years. I'm starting to see a lot of energy drinks. One patient I saw recently tells me he wakes up with a Red Bull and goes to bed or attempts to stay up and not go to bed with a Red Bull at night. And so I think, you know, protein is important, and we do know from the guidelines that children are and boys are getting too much protein, but I think it's not in isolation. And thinking about what else is contributing to that diet is important.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation talking with Elsie Taveras and Saba Khan about male health and nutrition. Much more after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and we're talking about teenage boys and their big appetites, what happens to their eating habits when they grow up and become adults. And again, our guests are Saba Khan, the medical director of the Healthy Weight Program, and that's at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and Elsie Taveras. She's the chief of the Division of General Pediatrics and director of Pediatric Population Health Management at Massachusetts General Hospital. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Saba, if I can go back to you, we were talking during the break, and I'd like to sort of break this down into actual food that young men or teenage boys or even grown men, mm-hmm, adult men, are eating when it comes to protein. So what is the recommended amount of protein?
So for boys who are between 14 to 18 years of age, it's actually 6.5 ounces. And that actually carries on right through till you're 30 years old. So a man is considered from 19 years old, he's considered a man, to a young man of 30 are also 6.5 ounces. By contrast, for girls of this age, it's from 14 to 18, you're required at 5 ounces. And women, 19 to 30, are required to have 5.5 ounces. of protein.
So if we're talking about 6.5 ounces, I mean, is that a hamburger? I'm trying to translate that into something that a young man would eat.
Sure. So, I mean, so to take it, so 1 ounce of protein is a boiled egg. 1 ounce of protein could be a quarter cup of some cooked beans. 1 ounce of protein is a tablespoon of peanut butter. So if you kind of take it at that, it kind of puts it into context that we don't need as much as we think.
Elsie, can you weigh in on this as well? And again, I was reading, again, this is looking at men ages 30 to 39 eating twice the amount of protein than is recommended.
Right. And unfortunately, the proteins that they are choosing aren't the healthiest. So, for example, Saba just mentioned the portion sizes. They're usually coming from meat, chicken, and eggs. But there are other healthier protein sources like nuts, for example. And those aren't the types of protein that we're talking about as we are exploring the dietary guidelines. The dietary guidelines really did show from the evidence that the excess protein is really coming from too much meat, chicken, and eggs, at the expense, I think, of calories from vegetables and less from meats and other proteins.
So taking that as a recommendation, Elsie, then substitute nuts or seeds or other non-meat proteins for that hamburger or that big piece of fried chicken.
Right. And I think it's one of the things that I was mentioning earlier is that we have to take a holistic approach to thinking about diets and children's diets, boys' diets are all, for me, a similar approach is not to just talk about protein in isolation from all the other things and what makes up a child's diet. So, yes, it seems from the dietary guidelines and from the evidence that supported it that children and adolescent boys should be getting more calories from vegetables and fruit, and actually we all should. Adolescent boys should probably be getting less calories from meat. But also, if we are thinking about a holistic approach to diet and diet counseling, really not forgetting the message about sugar and less sugar for all, right, as we counsel boys in particular about less protein, and boys and men, about those messages.
Is it considered manly? I mean, here we are, three women talking, mm-hmm. but is it considered manly, Saba, to eat a gigantic steak?
I think on some level, as a culture, we have kind of started to, annotate that manly or machoism is associated with the amount of meat you can eat. And I think that in itself is something that we can, as educators, as folks in the health systems, as parents, start to say that, you know what, adding some chickpeas is equivalent of having some steak, and the chickpeas can give you the same amount of protein and really some other goodness too, and they've got a lot of fiber in them as well, and they're going to keep you fuller. But I think we all have a role to start to make other foods look, I guess, trendier and
make chickpeas look manly.
Yeah,
right,
there you go. Yeah.
Can we do that, Elsie?
I'd love to see the marketing for chickpeas.
Yeah.
I might get my own little guy to pay attention to that. I think it's important to acknowledge the marketing, and even the sense of sports figures and male models and boys looking to those models and figures, hoping to have the same results as what they are seeing in front of them. And I think that they do turn to certain foods and quantity of those foods to look more like those sports figures in the media and models. And I think as we think about what is healthier and how do we market those chickpeas, it really is trying to find those similar figures and role models that can help us with the marketing to make those chickpeas look really attractive.
I would like to see that ad. I'll tell you that. Let me just throw out a couple more questions, and we'll get some more. We'll get some callers in. To you, Saba, and we were talking about this before going on the air. It's one thing if you're an active teenager to be eating this, you know, huge amounts of food, but then you become a more sedentary adult. Mm-hmm. Is that when the real problem set in, do you think?
I think so. And I think that's where kind of building on what Elsie has said kind of really comes in. It's those role models. So if we can build healthy habits early, then we don't need to face being 31 and saying, you know what, I don't know what it's like to have chickpeas in a salad. This is what my go-to was. I usually have a couple of steaks, maybe with some potatoes. Mm. That's kind of a drastic and that's an extreme example. But I think there's a lot to be said for the fact that it can catch up with you. And so reinforcing healthier habits earlier in the context of a familial basis, so families learning to eat healthy, parents role modeling, older siblings role modeling for younger siblings. I think there's a lot to be said for that. And I think that's where we could make things like chickpeas very trendy and safe. But I think there's something to be said for that. It does. It will. It's harder to change things at 30 than it is at 13.
Oh, you agree with that, Elsie? That I guess eating habits get kind of set as we get older and we get a little more set in our ways anyway.
Absolutely. It is so much easier to begin a healthier diet and healthier choices than to have to do some remediation later to try to reduce or decrease a type of food that has already been started is really difficult to do. I would also mention that there's a lot of really good reason to work in this developmental period with boys and girls. These boys are going to become fathers. And
absolutely,
as we start thinking about diet throughout the life course, there's really good reason to promote a healthy diet for our teenage boys and our teenage girls so that they can also have healthier diets for their, as they get older, but also as they start to parent, and the way that their own dietary practices influence the dietary practices of their offspring is really evident and is an important influence on the diet of their next generation.
And Elsie, even when you introduce that non-steak food and they go, ugh, you know, I don't want to eat that, you're saying just the introduction of it, the fact that it gets served in the family meal begins to set some of those patterns in place?
I think the patterns and early introduction is extremely important. I think we have lots of opportunities to do that through our schools. But also increasing the literacy of families in these different options that we've been talking about, and thinking about kind of the cultural aspects of different foods. But I really feel very strongly that early introduction and really working on improving the kind of nutritional literacy of families to know how to prepare these foods and to know that nuts are a healthier option for proteins, for example, and even that fish might be a healthier option than red meat. Some of these things, some of that literacy can be introduced to families early on and can have lifelong protective effects if we were to be able to do that introduction in early life.
Well, we are focusing in this hour of Radio Times on teenage boys, men's health, men's and teenage boys' nutrition. That's Elsie Taveras. She is chief of the Division of General Pediatrics, director of Pediatric Population Health Management at Massachusetts General Hospital. With us here in our Philadelphia studio, Saba Khan, and she's the medical director of the Healthy Weight Program, and that's at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, as many people have. Let me read a couple of comments. One from Dan. He says, I'm a physician and nutritionist. Excessive protein encourages insulin resistance, which is at the root of heart disease and even some cancers. Saba, since I'm looking at you, is he on the right track there?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we alluded to this earlier, that it absolutely anything in extreme, and I think that's what both Elsie and I have been really talking about. It's about moderation, and it really is about, again, reinforcing what Elsie was saying. There's a definite lack of knowledge. Parents don't know, and that's exactly what one of the reasons that we're in the situation we're in. At Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, in our clinic setting, one of the things that really strikes me is the fact that mothers are very surprised when I say, you know what, the sports beverages that you're getting Tommy when he's going to basketball, it's sugar, and it's actually really not going to help him. And unless he is an Olympian or someone who's on the soccer field for 4 hours, he's really not going to deplete his body of the sugar and salts that he needs. Water is going to be just fine. But I think that, yes, marketing, the wrong kind of marketing has done already a reasonable amount of damage. But I think the very silver, thick lining to this cloud, or the kind of light at the end of the tunnel, certainly is the fact that we can do a lot through educating young families that there is a really kind of some really great options if they can start to change some of their diets from a early standpoint.
Elsie, I mean, can we say that excessive protein or too much meat leads to cancer and kidney problems and cardiovascular disease? I mean, can we make those connections?
I think we can absolutely make those connections. I think you're the person that posed that question is absolutely right. There's very good research and evidence that even our diets in early life can contribute to metabolic characteristics that could lead in later life to cardiovascular disease, to cancer. And I think what the contributor mentioned is absolutely true, is that it's coming in expense to this excess protein, which isn't living up to all of the things that teenage boys in particular are seeking that excess protein for. It's often, as we've talked about, lose weight, more energy, build muscle. But actually, excess protein is often converted to fat instead of muscle mass. So I think not only are the teenage boys who are increasing their protein intake being somewhat misled, what we are hearing and what the caller expressed, which I think there's very good research to support, is that it's actually increasing their chronic disease risk for cardiovascular disease and cancer later down the road.
An email from Joan. She says, my son, now 22, began working out when he was in ninth grade. His diet began to deteriorate then and has only worsened as he has gone off to college. Could they comment on the mostly poor options in many college cafeterias? In high school, he soon began using liquid protein supplements, much to our dismay. We were unable to dissuade him that this was not really a food. And I think Joan is not alone in that, Saba, in trying to convince a young, maybe headstrong person that what they're doing is not good for their health. But she raises the question, once they get out of the house, perhaps into a college cafeteria, then, you have all these choices.
I think it's kind of going back to the point that I think Elsie has been really driving, which is the earlier you can start to form these habits, the better. Now, that's not to say that as the caller has pointed out that it's done for her son now, because she does make a great comment in the fact that our cafeterias in our higher institutions are not necessarily reflective of what the American dietary guidelines are trying to help us get to. And a lot of work needs to be done there. I think the school systems are starting to get it. But I think that higher education institutions still have to work on getting those better choices out there. And I think there's something to be said for the fact that there are opportunities in school for children themselves to learn about the different food groups and the different foods that they should be eating, and the fact that maybe they need to be better utilized. Some schools are doing a great job of it. Others aren't really touching it at all. So that you have those very folks that you are trying to help already know, so that they are already informed. And there are definitely programs around the country where kids are coming home and saying, "Mom, did you know that if we have green beans instead of having fries, we know we can get this and this from it." So that's definitely starting to happen, but that's where we really need to go.
Elsie, about a minute before our second break here, but I just want to reinforce something that both of you said earlier when we're talking about protein. A problematic protein is things like meat and chicken and eggs. The good protein, I guess, if I can put it that way, Elsie, are things like seeds and nuts. And I just see a lot of comments here, people saying, making sure that there is some difference. Do I have that right?
There is, absolutely. And there are healthier options to red meat, chicken, and eggs. And we mentioned some of those. We mentioned nuts. We mentioned fish. Those are not the ones that are being chosen. I think when the dietary guidelines are talking about excess protein, those are not in that list. And I think to just get back very quickly to that email, I actually think that by starting dietary counseling and working with children and families early, we get to shape preferences. And when our teenagers leave the home and go and are sort of out of are making their autonomous behavior choices, they can increase and create demand for those healthier foods in those institutions. So all the more reason for us to focus early on to shape those preferences.
Well, we're talking about hungry teenage boys and what happens to them when they grow up. Elsie Tavares and Saba Khan, our guests. We have much more after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We are talking about what men and boys eat too much of. And according to some new dietary guidelines, they eat too much protein. And again, our guests are Elsie Tavares, chief of the Division of General Pediatrics and director of Pediatric Population Health Management at Massachusetts General Hospital. Saba Khan, medical director of the Healthy Weight Program at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Saba, we were talking during the break about some other non-meat protein sources, even beyond nuts and seeds. What else should people put on their list?
So I think we talked about the famous chickpeas already, but I would add to that kidney beans, pinto beans, lentils. So there's definitely other foods that we can utilize for being the kind of protein part of our diet. And some of those actually give us some good fiber in there too and have a little bit of carbohydrate in them as well.
Well, it's so funny. You mentioned carbohydrate, and it seems like not so long ago, everyone said, no, eat carbs, and that's going to be your ticket to health and losing weight. And now people are saying, no, not carbs. It's something else. And it seems we, as the public, we get buffeted between these all this advice that we get.
I think we what we end up doing is that we do end up creating fads ourselves, and we end up demonizing foods as well. So right now, it looks like protein's going that way. In the past, sugar, which I would argue should at this point be demonized, has gone that way too, and carbs as well. And I think it kind of goes back to really what the American Dietary Guidelines are about, which is a balanced diet. You need a little bit of everything. I would actually point folks to really look at myplate.gov, which has been around for a number of years now, but got a really nice revamp recently, which is a really great place for families to look to see what their plate should literally look like.
Let me get some callers in. We've got Jake, who's been very patient, joining us from Chestnut Hill. Jake, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. So you kind of referenced this when you were talking about states kind of and concept the masculine consumption of meat.
Yes.
But I was wondering, in terms of the kind of rabid appetite and overeating of teenage boys, do you think that's primarily a physiological phenomenon or a socially constructed it's socially constructed in that they think that that's what they're supposed to do. That's what this appetite is supposed to be like. And so that's what happens.
Well, Jake, let me see what Elsie Tavera says about that. Is it one or the other or a little bit of both, Elsie?
I think it's a little of both. I think it's for sure driven by the rapid growth that's happening in that period of life. And I don't think that should be discounted. It's real. There is a larger appetite with these rapid growth periods. But I do also think, not so much with marketing or what's expected, it could be a part of that, but I do also think that it is the way that they manage those ravenous appetites and their schedules that are also contributors, and maybe much more so than the perceptions of what's expected. And that's where we get back to those routines of sleeping or too little sleep and the way that they're trying to meet those ravenous appetites with foods that are not keeping them full and that are poor quality foods. So I think it's a vicious cycle, right? So they're going through a growth spurt. They have this ravenous appetite. What they choose to eat and drink isn't really keeping them satiated. And so, their routines aren't contributing to their satiety. And so we see what the effect of the growth spurt and the ravenous appetite does to the diet, which then contributes more to that excess intake.
Jake, thanks for the call. Let's see what Heather from South Jersey has to say. Heather, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Morning.
Well, I wanted to start out because I have your slogan for marketing chickpeas to young men.
We're all ears.
So the slogan is chickpea magnets.
Oh, chickpea magnets. There you go.
Chickpea magnets. And if the chickpea people want to contact me, I have a whole story board for them.
Right. We need to find the right star for that, the right athlete.
But my point is, I teach sociology at a college down here in South Jersey, and I'm really loving what your presenters, your guests are talking about, and I just wanted to provide a little more macro context, which is our value system in America, which has to do with excess. It has to do with a frontier view and our consumerism, which is linked to our marketing. And all of this creates a social context wherein people are encouraged to do whatever they do, including eating, to excess, whether that's meat or sugar or fat or, you know, whatever it might be. We are excessive based on our value system. And I think that the more micro view of working within families is terrific. Of course, that has to be done.
Sure.
And then I also think a more macro view, instilling ideas maybe through more marketing campaigns. We kind of have to combat marketing that goes along with intensive farming of animals, which is all about creating a demand in order for people to make money.
Well, you know, Heather, I really appreciate the call to Radio Times. And, I mean, we are you were born in another country, Savakhan. We are a country where we value big. I mean, look at some of the houses that get built these days, or go to the movie theater and get a medium soda that you need two hands to hold. Do you think that's part of what's at stake here?
Sure. I think, no pun intended. That's
exactly
what's at stake.
I know.
I think it's about supersizing, and taking it to the extreme. And I think that's in part of why we're in the situation we're in with pediatric obesity and obesity generally. And I think we need to now backtrack and really take a close, hard look and make sure the next messaging we get out there is also not extreme. And that I kind of think I could have alluded to that already with the demonizing of this food or that food, to really start to go back to, again, what the caller reinforcing is saying about really the message of moderation and balance.
Heather, thanks for the call. Elsie, do you want to add anything to that?
I think the caller makes a very good point about, as I was mentioning earlier, that holistic approach to our diets. And and really how to market that and how to really think carefully about the helping to architect those choices that that families and children and teenage boys are making. And I think we can do quite a bit of help to our children by helping to think of that marketing approach to diet.
We have Paul who wants to know whether soy protein, whether that's should be in the seed and nut category or whether it's more in the hamburger category. Elsie, can you talk a bit about the potential problem of too much soy protein?
You know, I think I don't know that. And again, I think this is what Saba was saying is the demonizing of one food over the other. I actually do think that soy protein is quite good for you in moderation. And if I had to choose a steak over tofu in terms of its quality and its effects on metabolism, I would probably say that, you know, the soy protein is quite healthier than the saturated fat that comes along with the red meat protein.
Just doesn't have the same kind of taste or effect, don't you think, though?
Right. Right. It's quite different. Right. Quite different effect than a large juicy steak, for sure.
Let me get Robbie. I think we answered this question, but let me see what Robbie has to say. Calling us from Norristown. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And if you have answered it, my apologies. Food labels and protein drinks are listed in grams. Can you give some guidelines on how many grams are appropriate or too much? And I'll take your answer off the air.
Sure.
Thank you.
We did touch on this earlier, Saba, just to underscore that so that everyone understands grams of protein.
Sure. So I've actually got it more in ounces, but I think what the website that perhaps families could really look at online is what the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics actually has already out there, which is the Eat Right. And that kind of gives more details specifically on what children according to age and adult according to age should be consuming in terms of protein ounces versus grams, whatever you want to call it. So take a look at that.
Sure. Thanks. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. Elsie, we haven't really talked about things like processed meats, but is that even worse, let's say, than a steak off the grill?
They come with their own risk. The processed lunch meats. There was some information in the dietary guidelines about the avoidance of those processed meats as well. Not so much for their protein intake, although they also contribute to protein, but for some of the metabolites and characteristics of those of the processing of those meats. It's a challenge, right? Because we have hungry boys, hungry teenagers, and really trying to shape what they are eating in a time when we are learning more and more about some of the quality and the health aspects of certain foods. Really does present a challenge, even for packing that lunch for some of our younger children. I think what hasn't changed and what has been consistent across the dietary guidelines for years is the issue of more calories from fruits and vegetables, less sugar for all. And I think if we follow those two consistent messages, it can guide that lunchbox, and it can guide the profile of our meal planning for children.
I see a tweet here from Beta saying, would love to work with athletic trainers and coaches on spreading this message. And Saba, you were talking, or both of you were talking about for young men who are training for sports or some kind of athletic event, trainers and coaches play such an important role.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit about those young athletes. But even if you think about the personality or the generalization of that athlete, they're usually perfectionists. These are boys and girls who can take things to a different level because they can take their bodies to a different level. So you can really see where the risks are if they're given the wrong messaging about protein, about supplements, about how a regular diet can't get you to the same place that a supplement or whatever it is right. someone's saying to them can get them. Because this is someone who listens to their coach, who wants to get to that place where they can really kind of like physically peak. So we have to be very careful, but also realize that these young people are going to listen to what you want to what you're going to say because they want to do the best for their bodies because they want to perform well.
And Elsie, we're almost out of time here, but do these does this new guideline does it have the kind of strong language you think that needs to be in guidelines to tell, since we're talking about men and boys, young men and boys and older men how to eat?
I think so. I think there's quite a bit of guidance around the amount of protein. There's quite a bit of guidance on sugar and fruits and vegetables. And just to go back to that comment.
And we have about
comment,
30 seconds. I hate to do that to you, but go ahead.
I think our coaches and our athletic departments are a wonderful source for role modeling. My coach for my children who say bring water and orange or apple slices to the game is exactly the type of role model I want for my children and something that can be generalized to other coaches and other athletic departments. I think that was a fantastic comment and really a great opportunity to improve the diets of these teenage boys and our children in general.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you for joining us. Elsie Taveras, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Director of Pediatric Population Health Management at Massachusetts General Hospital, Saba Khan, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. The medical director of the Healthy Weight Program at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Well, we want to remember Sir George Martin, who died at the age of 90, as we close out this hour. We're playing A Day in the Life from the Beatles' 1967 album, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
To look, having read.